Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's your boy TP Thomas back at the helm. Got the table all set. Sports City is wide open, people. The call-in number is, well, we'll get into that shortly. But first and foremost, I want to start the show off the right way. Just got news, word around the kitchen, everything that needs to be addressed. Rest in peace to a longtime legend. I'm calling him a legend. You may not think he may be a legend, but in the World Wrestling Federation, which is now World Wrestling Entertainment, but I'm going to go back as far as the WWF days, to Roddy Piper, passed away at the age of 61. Moment of silence to Roddy Piper. Okay, Sports City, man, you got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with us. I done took off the blazer, loosened up this tie, stepped aside. The kitchen timeless is alive. Sports City, let's go.
You take y'all somewhere else right now. Looking for a needle and a haystack. A nigga got zoned out with me, man. Right. Got zoned out.
She's left the center.
Zoned out. Real shit.
Call the number 917-889-9592. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And I'm going to try and get as many of these topics that I can out before I get the chefs to fill into this kitchen. I'm alone at this table, so it's fine. The first topic that I'm going to roll into, right, is the situation between Tom Brady and the NFL. Now, interesting enough, that this has gone on for the past couple of weeks or so. They already said that they are upholding his suspension, looking like he will be starting week one to week four out of the NFL season. Now, crazy enough, the court system in Minnesota ruled that they pushed the situation to New York, and the judge in New York is actually stating that he would like to see Tom Brady in the NFL in that courtroom by August 12th. Well, I said the NFL, but more or less Roger Goodell and the NFL, everybody that, you know, tied into the situation. And it was me and Chandler, I think Nacho might have been here also, a few of the Sports City heads as we sat here right here in the kitchen. As I look at the old paperwork that I had here previously, that I'm looking at the paperwork now, I think it was me and Chandler that hung on to the situation that said, Brady will be able to play by week one. Now, it still shocked me that they upheld the situation, and knowing that Brady would be able to take this thing to court if he would, and in which it is looking like it's going to court, that he might be successful in proceeding with that leg of the situation. And it is going to be a very tough situation. He might miss a week or two of preseason play. But this is damaging to the NFL if he is to end up getting his way after they've already came out with a statement saying that they're upholding the suspension, because there's something that Chandler likes to hit on. A lot of the NFL players that take the NFL to court end up succeeding and winning the case that goes up against the NFL. And looking at the situation with their primetime player being Tom Brady, it's like all of the things that I painted, where it'll be, you know, the ring ceremony, them hanging the banner up of them winning another Super Bowl. I really don't think they would want to start that up, the season up like that, especially with the head-to-head matchup. And I'm doing this because, yes, I am a football head. I love the sport. But with the matchup of Big Ben going up against Tom, like I think that takes away from the spectacle of that game. If you're going to have Garoppolo be under center, And, you know, they're trying to heighten it up, saying that he's ready for the, you know, the big lead and make, you know, be the next man up in the situation, which I know Belichick probably would have him prepared for the situation. But this is something that is still making my eyebrows raise. The NFL tries to be stern in some ways or some form, and then ends up either backpedaling or getting caught on the situation where they get the legs taken from underneath them. And I don't know. I think they should have just more or less just buttoned up the situation and let Brady get by with the suspension and remove the four-game suspension. That's just me, because I really don't think that there's no significant edge if there was air missing from the ball, so on and so forth. But that's me. And they, you know, week four, the rematch will be there regardless if Brady's out the first four games or if he plays up until week five or whatever, and they play the Colts again. It'll be in Indy, so at least the Colts have the home field edge. But this is a tough situation for the Patriots to now go up and down with the emotion. He may be back. He may not be back. He may not be back. So I want to see how we do address this. So we do have a caller in the building calling in from the Arizona area. We have Nacho in the building. Nacho, welcome to the roundtable. How are you feeling this evening?
Oh, you know, I'm feeling good. It's getting off work. Just talking a little Tom Brady.
Okay, your thoughts on now the judge out there in New York basically said that they want to see Brady and Goodell back in court by August 12th. So this is about 12 days away. At least he'll probably miss a game of preseason play, and I don't even think if that's considered. So I think he'll still be able to play the preseason game, the one that's in doubt is the regular season game. So your thoughts on Brady still having a shot to be able to play week one?
I don't think he's playing week one. I've been behind that notion. I always thought it was going to be two games, not four. But the thing is, if this was going to get reduced at all, it would have had to have done by Goodell. I don't think that this gets reduced anymore. I really do think this is the stronghold. The fact that it was moved from Minnesota to New Jersey, New York, I just feel this is the statement that the NFL and this judge and the rulings everyone wants to make. I don't know why this is the statement that they want to make. I don't know why this is the this act, you know, as small of an egregious act as it is, or big, depending on if you think it's a huge deal about the PCI, or like Ty, where you don't think there's any big deal about PSI. It's just one of those things that I think the NFL is hard set, Goodell is hard set, everyone's hard set, because they feel and this is just what I've got from reading and listening. They feel like he lied. They feel like he, you know, regardless if they have any hard proof, in order for them to, what would the word be? In order for them to prove that he had nothing to do with it, they had to look at phones and records and things of that nature. And he was unwilling to give up those things. Now, there was an interesting point brought up to where the whole phone aspect, giving up the phone or not giving up the phone, and how big of a deal is that, and the fact that they don't have subpoena power, and it was more of a question than it was a demand, or was it a demand, yada, yada. Did Wells actually say, give me your phone, or did he say, just pull up the text and let me see, and if it has nothing to do with it, then it's over with. There are varying degrees of what happened in there. If you listen to Wells, that's all he said. He said, I don't need to see your phone, just let me look at it. I think that, and as insignificant, as small as that sounds, I think that's what set this whole, you know, train in motion. Withholding information and not being forthright, I think it's the biggest thing that the NFL is sticking their guns to. Not PSI, not the quote-unquote integrity of the game, the unwillingness of Tom Brady to either, you know, clear his name, which he has said he didn't do anything wrong. If you didn't do anything wrong, clear your name and let's get it over with. I think that fact is looming over more than the 12.5 PSI. Whether or not that helped him win by 20-plus points over the last four or five games, who knows? But it's just against Indianapolis. I can't see him playing the first two games. And as it looks, he might not even play the first four games. And I believe, as you speculated, or you brought up the point about if he does miss those four games, the one game back is Indy. That is the first time we will see him on the field, I believe. So I think this all set into motion back when Brady destroyed his phone. and he showed the unwillingness to either clear his name, which he, you know, through all intents and purposes and all the media and all the meetings, has said he has never, he didn't do it. He had nothing to do with it. He had no control over it. He didn't give an order. He was playing the game. He, you know, for all intents and purposes, they know how he likes the footballs. So they just did it without his knowledge. You know, if you believe that, you do. If you don't, you don't. But I think it has more to do with the non-helping or the non-compliance of giving up the cell phone, of giving up the emails, of proving your innocence. I think that's where it gets to me. If you're going to come out every time on, in front of the media, in front of everyone, and beat your chest how you did nothing wrong, prove it. That's all I ask. If you prove it, then you can play. But I think the way that they have gone about this, the appeal process, him upholding the appeal, and now the court and everyone saying they want a ruling before game one, I think they just want to push it to a 4-game suspension and have him come back to play Indianapolis week 6. It's one of those things that I think, like I said, I keep going back to proving your innocence, and I think that's the biggest thing that the NFL is clinging to. The fact that if you're so innocent, prove it.
Now, here's an interesting situation that we've looked at. If they have a situation around Greg Hardy and him and his off-the-field situation with him and his lady friend, and his situation got reduced, and also another situation that, you know, Chandler, I feel, is completely right on. A lot of these players that actually take this matter into court, they've been batting 1,000. A lot of these players have been successful going up against the NFL, and who's to say that Brady, probably being the biggest name in the NFL, and that's right, I'm saying the biggest, over Peyton Manning, that's right. If anybody wants to come in the kitchen and contest it, I would love it. You already know the number, 917-889-9592, but Brady winning or the AFC, what, 6 times, and I mean, his resume speaks for itself. I don't even have to get into it. He's been to the AFC Championship, what, 9 or 10 times. Knowing that he's been the face of this NFL, and knowing that they've been in front of Spygate, Deflategate, so on and so forth, and not really having concrete evidence that sticks other than the two ball boys saying that they want to do this, that, or the third. They don't really have too much proof around Tom Brady. Who's to say that he's not successful up against this NFL? And if he is successful, now this is the big part of it. If he is successful, do they start to laugh? And I'm talking about the NFLPA, being the Players Association. Do they start to laugh at the NFL itself? Because it doesn't look like the NFL holds any weight in front of these guys when they literally try to come down with, you know, suspensions or big matters, if you will, in front of a lot of these players in the NFL.
You're right, but this judge, this court, isn't trying to see if Brady's innocent. They're trying to see if the arbitration process was done correctly. If the appeals process that Roger Goodell came out and said you have to uphold the 4-game suspension. That's what this court process is all about. It's not proving whether Brady is innocent or Brady is guilty or he had anything to do with the PSIs. It has to do with the fact that the arbitration process was done correctly and it was done properly. If it was, we may see Brady miss 4 straight games and not see him come back until Indianapolis. That's why I think this has more to do with what the appeals process went through and how Brady handled the situation more than the PSI situation and deflating footballs.
Okay, well, we'll have to see. Like I said, it is a very interesting situation that the judge made the statement that he wanted to see them back there. So August 12th, I think people in New England will be holding their breath. And I think more or less a lot of people around the NFL, even though, you know, I'm not the biggest New England fan, or a lot of people aren't the biggest New England fans. I think a lot of people rather see Brady out there balling, because you want to knock the champs off at their highest strength. You don't want to get up there and win a game and be like, oh, well, he's suspended. We'll take the win. Of course, everybody will take the win, but it's not like you really beat that team. Maybe, at least that's how I feel in that situation, because you got to knock Brady off instead of knocking off Garoppolo, who hasn't even had a professional NFL start yet. But these guys, neither here nor there. The Brady's in front of this matter, so these teams will figure out how they can get it, especially to start the season off. But I know that, you know, it's a chink in their armor if they don't. It's an asterisk type of game if they're not prepared to get off without Brady. So that's how I feel about it. Anything else before we do get away from it? Because I got a lot of stuff to get to.
No, that's good.
Okay. first and foremost, out there in the West Coast region, Russell Wilson, contract extension, looking like the number is around $87.6 million. Your thoughts on the back-to-back NFC quarterback representing the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl for the past two seasons, is this enough? Or do you think the Seahawks could have gone higher? Or your thoughts on the situation around Russell Wilson's extension?
You know, this is one of those things where, you know, you really, when it comes to Russell Wilson, we're going to have this argument. Is he really that great or is his team really that good? I mean, that's the argument that we had pretty much up until this you know, this drop today. Sorry about the noise. I'm in the grocery store getting some money orders. But the thing is, when you talk about him getting the contract, I think Seattle answered the question for all of us. He is that good. $61 million or $60 million guaranteed. You know, Chandler and I, we don't look at the big gaudy number, the 4 years, 82, the 5 years, 120. We look at that guaranteed number, and the guaranteed number of 60, 61, that's the big one over 4 years. That's where I have a little bit of a problem. This guy is getting paid like the second best quarterback in the league right underneath Aaron Rodgers. I'm sorry, but there's three or four, five, six, seven, eight quarterbacks at least better than him in this league. So getting paid that much, I have a problem with. But two-time Super Bowl appearing player, winning one of those, regardless if he's had one of the best defenses of all time, regardless if he's had one of the best run games in the past five, six, 7 years, that's all thrown to the side. Because when he plays a game, like an NFC Championship game, he throws four interceptions in the first half. He's worth 4 years, $60 million guaranteed. I just don't understand it. I get he's good. I get he's been great at times. Obviously, rolling out, being able to make good passes on the run, not at will, but better than most. He's been good at it. But I don't think he's worth this money. I'm not a big fan of this contract. Now, as it pertains to Seattle giving him the money, I really don't think he deserves a check. I really don't. I think he's surrounded by a bevy of talent. He could possibly go down as this generation's Terry Bradshaw. He's surrounded by almost the best talent in the league. You can argue about five, six positions on his team that are one of the top three or four in the league outside of his quarterback position. So I'm not a big fan of the payday. I don't like it. I think they threw way too much money at him. I think he's worth at least maybe half of that. I'm not really thrilled on it. You're getting paid like a quarterback who can leave this team and go to any other team and win 8, 9, 10 games, and he can't. There's no way logically I can support this contract in my eyes. It's just too hard for me. The guy surrounded by all these players and a great team. So I think he should be paid accordingly. Give him a game manager salary. That's pretty much what he is. He's a game manager who at times shows flashes of greatness. That's what I see from him, and that's how I feel. I don't think he's worth the $60 million. Now, I'm not going to say he shouldn't get the money or go collect a check. Obviously, everyone's entitled to make their own money. My guess, humble opinion, he's not worth it to me. I think they overspent. And I think they're going to have a hard time signing Cam now. And this might be the first straw that will eventually break the camel's back.
Now, here goes this situation. Tavares Jackson is the backup. R.J. Archer, who we have not heard of, is the third-string quarterback. So those guys are shoo-ins to be backups as they are right now. They are already playing hardball with Marshawn Lynch, where they're not really giving Marshawn that attention because he is nearing the end of the sand in that hourglass, if you will, of having those primetime years in the NFL. So to be honest, and I hate to be rude, and I feel like I'm rude in saying this, and not toward you, but I'm just saying this in general, Russell Wilson is that offense. He is the complete offense, if you look at it right now, from Kurtz to even having Jimmy Graham being added to the situation to Doug Baldwin being a tough receiver as well. You even remember when Deion Sanders said that these are a bunch of no-name receivers. You know what I'm saying? And not to even try to peg that to them, because these guys went out there and made plays, came up with the game-winning touchdown up against the team in the NFC Championship. Who cares on how that went down? Russell Wilson had to make those plays to get there. And to win the NFC enough in a back-to-back situation, there's only been a handful of quarterbacks that have done that, especially at this given time in the moment right now. And I understand the defense has been stellar up until this point, too. You can't discredit the Legion of Boom. But if they put a game manager like Tavares Jackson in there, which he is a game manager, I don't think he could get these guys to have a postseason win. I mean, to have them being paid accordingly, I think that's a bit of a reach, if you will, because there hasn't been a handful of quarterbacks, whether it's 7 or 8 quarterbacks that you're looking at in the NFC, haven't been to back-to-back Super Bowls, haven't been there, and have had more talent on the offensive side of the board than he's had. Honestly, if you look outside of Marshawn Lynch, who are you looking at within his offense that is a household name? Outside of Jimmy Graham now, who has not played a snap for the Seattle Seahawks team. That's what I'm looking at right now. Yes, their secondary is what it is right now. I mean, their front seven does their job. They stay home and make plays. I don't want to take too much away from the entire Legion of Boom. I actually know one of the players specifically personally also, but I can't look past Russell Wilson as being, and I want to say in about the next 2 years, deciding on what's going to happen in Marshawn Lynch's career or not, Russell Wilson is going to be the same or equivalent to this team as what Tom Brady is to the Patriots. Regardless of how Tom Brady's been with that Patriot team, the system, how that defense locks into everything that Bill Belichick is, you know, been a part of, how they, you know, basically keep people within reason of not blowing the game open so Brady still has a shot to win those games. Russell Wilson is in the same mold that Tom Brady is in. Yes, Brady's won 4 championships, so on and so forth. If this defense stays together, as long as he has a decent running back behind him, he's a mobile quarterback, he's still young, he's not really taking a big hit, he's already been through adversity in the NFL game. I mean, what is he not going through? I think that he's actually going to get better. And the worst thing about it is this dude just walked off an NFL football field throwing an interception in the Super Bowl where everybody and their mother know that he was not supposed to pass the ball. He's a scrambler himself. He could have just – they were at the 6-inch line. They weren't even at the 6-yard line. They were at the 6-inch line, and they told him to throw a slant. Like, everybody knows it. Marshawn could have got the ball. He could have just followed the center and just fell into the end zone. They did one of the more riskiest plays ever. And that's probably one of the more bitterest tastes that he could have in his mouth. So I know that either, A, this could be a season where they don't get back to the NFC Championship or Super Bowl, but you're going to hear about the Seahawks team regardless. And Russell Wilson is going to have something to do with it. If he has one of those nasty seasons where he throws – And I want to really peg him to like double digits, but just, let's just say he throws over 15 interceptions this season, has a low total of touchdown passes thrown. Let's just say like 21 to be low for him. I mean, because he has receivers now, and he has Jimmy Graham, so Graham is a target. I think Graham could easily get him 7 to 10 touchdowns this season alone. 7 to 10 alone. You know what I'm saying? So I think Russell Wilson demands more respect than what he's given right now. And from what he had alongside him, and for him to get to a Super Bowl twice, I know the defense does their work, but you have to legitimately look at this offense for getting it done also. And he has been the guy breaking that huddle and making plays happen.
I mean, you could talk all you want about the offense, but defense wins championships. That team is the defense. You could say he's going to be the face of the offense or, you know, what, depending on Marshawn Lynch, he's got all these quote-unquote weapons now. We saw when you put the ball in Russell's hands and he has to throw the ball against a, I don't even want to call him an elite defense or a very good, great defense. My Packers defense was playing middle of the road last year, and when his ball was in his hands and he was told to make plays through that whole first half, we watched interception after interception after interception. Then what happened? Marshawn Lynch got the ball. When the onside kick happened, Russell Wilson didn't throw him down the field. Marshawn Lynch ran him straight down the field and for a touchdown. I get what you're saying. He's made great plays at the most opportune times. That man sucked for 60 minutes of one game, and in overtime he made one great play, and that's all we're going to talk about. If you watch the NFC Championship game again, like I have multiple times, Russell Wilson's a game manager who was put up against one of the middle-of-the-road defenses and couldn't do nothing for 60 minutes. And in overtime, he had to make one great play, like he has done most of his career, make one great play at the end of a game, and you won. If that makes you an elite great quarterback, then that makes you an elite great quarterback, but it doesn't to me. The guy, time after time again, throws interceptions in games, gets away with it because his defense gets him the ball right back, and they hand it off to Marshawn. So, yes, I am interested to see what he does, but there's nothing that's going to change my mind other than him coming out and throwing 40 touchdowns and only throwing 12 to less interceptions. That's the only way he's making, in my eyes, he's earned this check. This check to me is, in my eyes, you earn your check with your stats as the quarterback, because the wins, the losses, they're all going to be put on you regardless of what happens in the game. If you win a game or lose a game, it's all on the quarterback. But I think the only way, in my eyes, this contract is validated is with Russell Wilson leading this team on offense. Not Marshawn Lynch, not him throwing interceptions to where the defense has to dig them out of holes and get them back into the game. Him making plays. Maybe that changes this year with Jimmy Graham. Defenses have to change stuff with Jimmy and Marshawn now. Maybe that changes. But in that case, Jimmy made him better, not the other way around.
Well, Jimmy Graham is no longer, well, not even a part of the situation yet. He has not caught a pass in a regular season game, right?
Exactly.
The 3 years Russell Wilson has been in this league, he's been in the playoffs. The 3 years that he's been in this league, he has gotten over 20 touchdowns thrown each season. One season he's had double-digit interceptions thrown, and that was his rookie season. He's careful with the ball. He's in his first two seasons, he's had a rating of over 100, except last season, where he actually had a 95. He's close to 100 every season. He's increased passing yards every single season with the running back name Beast Mode behind him. Right. So I don't know. I don't know if you don't want to call him elite or don't want to give him credit or just bitter lemonade is in that cup, which I understand I'll be pissed off too. Believe me, I don't deal with my team falling short in front of the pinnacle of everything that they're playing for up until this point. But this guy has been getting it done. Whether he had a crucial NFC game and, I mean, excuse me, NFC championship game, let me get it right, and turn the ball over seven different times, but when he needed to come up with a big play, Tre'Mon Williams could not make a play on the ball, touchdown scored, and, you know, just the, I guess, the emotion that ran through him of him suffering and him telling everybody not to quit. His team didn't quit it, and they didn't give up on him. They told him to keep fighting. That's what Warriors do. Believe me, I bet you none of his teammates are complaining at the money that he's getting right now. None of them. And if you can name eight quarterbacks, and if you can name, no, Cam, who means more to the team, Cam Chancellor or Russell Wilson?
Cam Chancellor.
You're out of your mind.
No,
you're out
Cam
of your mind.
All day. Without Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman isn't who he is. Without Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, and I throw Earl Thomas in there, but without one of those two, that defense is shot. I mean, they are the pinnacle of that back end of that defense. That defense is the team. You want to talk about high-powered offenses or quote-unquote what he's got now, the defense is the team. That's plain and simple. Without that defense, regardless of what they got on offense, regardless of Beast Mode, they're not winning games without that defense. They're not winning games because of Russell Wilson. They're winning games because of that defense.
So that means that Tavares Jackson could go on the center and make these things happen, no?
Tavares Jackson can take that ball and go to the playoffs. I'm not going to say he's going to win a playoff. But Tavares Jackson can take the reins on that team and go to the playoffs, because that team right now, without a QB, can win 9 games. But you got one of the best games and the top defense in the league. We had no Aaron Rodgers for 9 games, and our defense stepped up and our run game stepped up, and we still won the division. If you've got a defense and a run game that can step up and be the best, it doesn't matter who your quarterback is. We threw Scott Tolzien. We threw Matt Flynn. We threw the light-skinned guy from Pittsburgh out there. They won games with a defense that stepped up and a run game. If you've got that, which the Seattle Seahawks have, without a shadow of a doubt, there's no argument, they're one of the top 2 defenses and have one of the top 3 run games in the league. You don't need a quarterback to win you regular season games to get to the playoffs when you have those things. You need the quarterback to step up in the playoffs and win you Super Bowl games and make one great play because your defense in your run game does what it needs to do for 60 minutes while you just threw interceptions.
Listen, I don't know a quarterback that's been in back-to-back Super Bowls in their first three seasons. That's one. And two, here's the interesting thing I'm looking at. He had to make these plays happen. And three, I do not know if you've ever seen Tavares Jackson play ball, but everywhere he's gone, he has never seen a playoff. Never. Even with Adrian Peterson, whether he was in Buffalo, he's not played great football. I do not think Tavares Jackson is going to get these guys 8 wins. I'm sorry. He had to move that ball. People will put 9 people in the box to make sure Tavares threw the ball, and they still would question that, even with Jimmy Graham going after passing. Even with him going out there, there's no way. There's no – if you think there's a safety more important than what is the most important position in football? Please tell me.
The quarterback.
No further questions, Your Honor. Anything else?
Joe
Flacco or Russell Wilson?
Joe Flacco.
Oh, wow.
That's not even a question.
Okay. We'll see. We're fucking quarterback land, man. The call number is 917-889-9592, man. Come in here and get a dish, man. Roundtable halfway through. Like I said, we're stuck in quarterback land. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have already stated Jameis Winston is the starter for this team week one. Now, knowing how well this guy played the quarterback position in college, coming to an NFL team with weapons, I'm not even going to lie, looking at both of his receivers with V-Jack and Mike Evans on the outside, they also have, they got Tim Wright back, another tight end from the Patriots that just left the Tampa Bay team a year ago to go to the Patriots to win the Super Bowl, said, I'll come right back. Came back. They also have, I wonder if Wright will end up being a starter, which I doubt, but because they also have Stocker and Seferian Jenkins as well, which I think Wright might end up getting a starting job, but they actually post Seferian Jenkins as the starter at this given point. And the one thing that actually is important to me for this offense, even though I got a ton of my friends that are Bucs fans, is the muscle mouse, if you will, in Doug Martin. If he can stay healthy to help this team, because he's a speedster, he sees daylight, people are running for a while. But your thoughts on Jameis getting this position, i.e. after Mike Glennon was supposed to be the guy, after they already got rid of Freeman, Glennon was pegged to be the guy with the big arm coming out of college from NC State. Looking like this is going to be his job. Winston could probably learn from him, but no, they're going with a guy that already has a winning mentality and probably can make those plays that can move the ball consistently for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers team. Do you think this is going to be a hindrance, or do you think Tampa Bay will actually take off flying into this NFC South and make it difficult for those teams in that division?
Okay, this is – Bucs fans aren't going to like me, but they will like me in a couple years. Here's how it's going to be, in my opinion. I think this is the best move for the Bucs, and I do think Jameis Winston will be a good to great and possibly with enough, he could be an elite quarterback. But this year, I don't see it. This year, this is going to be the learning year. I think Jameis Winston takes the route that most quarterbacks took coming in to the league years ago. Year one was the learning process. Year two is that slump, getting over teams, getting to know how good you are, or when you make a great play, they're going to highlight it and try to shut you down. And then in year three, you break out of your shell and you become the quarterback we all saw you in college and winning all those games. The thing is, I think Jameis Winston will throw lots of touchdowns and lots of interceptions. This guy, I don't think he's inept. I don't think he's, like, you know, not good for the job. I really think this is the guy for Tampa. They needed to get rid of Glennon. They needed a fresh start, and I think this is what they need to do. That defense is stacked, that front four, looking real nice. So the defense is going to be okay. I just feel like Jameis is going to take that three-year time to figure out how to become the best quarterback he could be, but there will be some growing pains. We will see some interceptions where we're going to scratch our head, and we're going to see some great plays. And like you said, with those offensive weapons, with Evans, with – can't think of – what's the other receiver's name? I'm sorry, and you just said it.
Vincent Jackson.
Vincent Jackson, yeah, sorry. But with Jackson and with Evans, we're going to see some spectacular touchdowns, and we're going to see some plays where we see that that Jameis from college. But it's not going to be consistent, and it's not going to be every game. I think, like I said, this is just going to be the learning curve. I don't expect him to come out and like you light it up, take over and put the Bucs on the road in this sorry NFC South, which I believe there was a 3-win team in week 9 that was still in contention for the first place in the NFC South. So we know what this division has in store to some degree. I don't think him and Tampa Bay are going to be able to handle Carolina and in New Orleans and even in Atlanta, who are, you know, I wouldn't want to say head and shoulders above them, but are in a better position than they are right now. So I don't think they're going to take the league by storm. It would be a happy surprise, I'm sure, for Bucs fans and for Jameis Winston fans. But I don't think they're going to take the league by storm this year. I think this is similar to and I don't want to say it like him, but this might be an Aaron Rodgers first year type of year. He threw 4,000 yards. He only won 6 games. But we could see the maturation process, and we could see him developing into the player. I'm not comparing him. I'm not saying he can be Aaron Rodgers. I'm not saying he's going to be. All I'm saying is I think this is the year where we see him not win very many games, but throw lots of yards, get some touchdowns, and show us what he can be on a consistent basis. So this is going to be something that I think the Bucs fans are going to be very interested to see, but I don't think they're going to be hitting the win column quite yet just this year multiple times. I think it takes a couple of years, and if they stick with it, if they can put this guy at the center of everything and give him their full support and back him at all times, I think within 3 years, they will like the quarterback they have, and they will be winning games. And they might be, depending on how the other three teams in this division go, they might be the cream of that division in 3 to 4 years with Jameis Winston. I think the ceiling for him is as high as you could possibly get, but he needs to get there through training and experience. I don't think he's got it just quite yet. He's not one of those guys like a Luck come into this league and just take over by storm.
Well, here's the thing. I think he has more intangibles than at least some of the quarterbacks that's there right now. And this is not to poke any type of fire at these guys, but I have to right now. One, I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm starting this one up, Sports City. I got to. I got to do it right now. One, I think right now the Bucs have a better season than the Saints right now. You already put the Saints in the fella. That's actually to me. Them losing Jimmy Graham is big. I don't think they can lose Jimmy Graham and just think that Drew Brees is just going to somehow guide these guys to at least a 9-win or better season. At least. So I think right now the Saints are on a rebuild right now, and especially on what's going to happen around Drew Brees and that receiving core, who's questionable, to say the least. And I've been trying my best to wait for Colston to be this big-time receiver, and he just doesn't have that every game dynamic play. And they've lost, you know, guys like Devery Henderson and Lance Moore. Like, those guys are all gone. So they are on the rebuild. They got Cooks, the youngster, also, but that's one. Two, the Atlanta Falcons and how these guys are consistently injured, and also looking at the situation around Roddy White, if he still has it in the bag to keep giving these guys consistent play, which he's been out majority of last season, and Julio Jones also, both of these guys. So the Atlanta Falcons are in question. The intangibles that I'm talking about, though, is the Cam Newton situation, because Cam Newton doesn't throw a consistent percentile type of ball. He's not consistent throwing that ball. He has a big arm. Of course, he could take off or scramble, but I mean, they got into the playoffs by the hairs of their chin last season and barely beat Arizona. And as soon as they got away from Arizona, they got blown out up against Seattle. So I think Tampa is in a good standing situation with some good weapons around them offensively. Their defense is decent. But the bigger question I do have around Jameis Winston right now is this, and I want to ask you this question specifically. Does he have the same issues that he had with Jimbo Fisher down in Florida State? Because everybody used to see Jameis go off on his tangents and go to Jimbo, and Jimbo used to take a lot until that game they played Oregon and lost, is where Jimbo basically went at him and said, look, you can sit the bench, like after he told him that, you know, to calm down, relax. Do you think he'll have the same issues with Lovie Smith, or will they have an understanding in his rookie season?
It is Lovie for the infamous can't train him, can't coach him. Who is that? I think
that was Mike Singletary. That's Singletary.
Oh, that was Lovie. Okay, sorry.
Lovie Smith did the Rex Grossman is our quarterback. That's Lovie Smith.
Thank you. I should know too, right? I think obviously Jimbo put up a lot with everything that Jameis did because of the W's. I mean, the guy was constantly winning. There was no you know, reason to get on it. They were constantly winning games, and they were doing what they had to do. So I think that aspect of it, I think he will have a problem because they're not going to be winning games. They're not going to be undefeated week two, week three, week four. I don't think they're not going to be undefeated halfway through the season. So it's not going to be where he gets to go off and do these attitude or rant type of things when things aren't going his way or what have you. If he starts throwing multiple interceptions, obviously they're not going to pull him or say anything that would, you know, hurt the kid. We're going to sit you down. Obviously, with a rookie going through some growing pains, you do not want to do anything like that. But I do think that, yes, that he gets in his face and he lets him know, this is my team. This isn't your team. This isn't college. I'm not Jimbo Fisher. I'm not gonna protect you with everything in my power like Jimbo did. I mean, we can all sit here and say what we want, but Jimbo Fisher protected him with every ounce of being in his body. So this is going to be a little different. Obviously, this isn't someone who chose to play for Tampa, who picked Tampa out of a hat or out of multiple schools. He was chosen by Tampa because that's who they wanted. That's who they think can lead the team. So I do believe that this is a situation where we may see Lovie get into it with Jameis on the sideline. We may see Lovie and Jameis get into an altercation once. But I think that's all it takes. Lovie's that guy. He is pretty hard and stern. I only think it's going to take once for Jameis and Lovie to get into an interaction like that, and Jameis will be able to pull the reins in and see what he's done wrong or what have you, and correct his mistake if there is any. So I think this is a match where he's not going to shelter him, so to speak, but he's not going to throw him to the wolves and say things like Jimbo said, well, we'll sit you or we'll take you out. I think he'll let him know how it goes in the NFL, and that's not how you act. So I don't think we'll see too many incidences as it pertains to his attitude and on the sideline and things like of that nature. But I do think we might see one time a little bit of I don't want to say an altercation, but a talking, a calming of Jameis, you know, this is how it's done, and this is how we do it. So I don't really think there's going to be too much trouble. We might see it early in the year, but I think after that first time, Jameis will know the deal. He'll know what's up. And if by all means, those veterans in that locker room they'll be able to, you know, put him in place if Lovey has a problem or says anything. And these guys see that he's got the talent. I need to straighten up mentally. So I'll definitely put some onus onto those veterans in the locker room too as well. I'll get this guy straight and narrow if he starts to act up.
Okay, so there's a couple interesting topics in boxing that I don't know if we will save it for tomorrow or whatever, but I had a couple of baseball, but I know you said you had some baseball dishes that you wanted to throw out to the kitchen, so let's have at it.
I did have a couple. I did have the Mets. I wanted to talk to you and Chandler about the signing, then not signing. Of the Brewers player, and then now them today trading, I believe it was two pitchers to get Yanis Cespedes. I just wanted to see, with the Mets needing bats, is that the bat that they needed? Is it a little too late? And is this something that I think the Mets are two games out of first? Is this, I'm not sure about that, but if they are, is that something that can definitely pull both them into the first place and make something of this team? Or is it, like I said, is it just a little too late with the Mets?
Okay, the Mets are three games out of first, which makes it very interesting right now. So that's very interesting that you bring that up. Now, Yonis Cespedes is a big-time bat to bring there, but the one thing I'm worried about with Cespedes right now is the move that happened with him. He's been traded from three teams in the past two or three seasons, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, including the A's, including Detroit, including the Boston Red Sox. Now he's going to the Mets. Like, I don't know if that gets into his psyche or if he buys into the New York Mets system and to go in there and just free swing and make things happen. This is going to be big to see if Cespedes can kind of shake this quickly and make a difference for this team that is still in the hunt right now for the National League East, to say the most. Now, the situation around Carlos Gomez from the Brewers, that's big, because I thought that he would be huge because he's been hitting the ball pretty well. And also, he's got great speed on the bases, and I think he's a morale guy that a lot of people feed off of, especially if he is, you know, on the bases and, you know, a lot of players in behind him that are on a roster are trying to knock him in, if you will. So I think this is actually a let-up situation on the Mets that they could have gotten him, but they get Cespedes instead, which is actually big for him. I still think no matter where Goldman goes, and I'm one to talk because I was actually one that they actually seen the trade, the Twins trade him and watch him go to the Milwaukee Brewers. And now watching Carlos Gomez go to the Houston Astros, where the Astros not only have him, but they also have Scott Kazmir. This is big for them, not only in the pitching staff, not only with them trying to make a run for the AL wild card, but Gomez makes a difference right now to this team, the way he hits and the speed that he brings to that team, especially in the field and offensively too. So I think Houston takes this as a blessing. The Brewers, I don't know where they go from here. The Mets, they also have a big-time player right now getting Yonis Cespedes. But like I said, I'm concerned about Cespedes moving forward with everything that's gone on up until this point in the past two or three seasons, where he's been before the deal. I mean, before he got to play for the team, it's like, this is a big move for Oakland, or this is a big move for Boston, and nobody wants him. They're getting rid of him as soon as possible. I wonder what is going on with Yonis Cespedes. Like, really, like, he's supposed to be a big bat. He was dominating at one point at the when he was in front of the plate. Teams pick him up. They say he's a good guy. Next thing you know, he's gone within the season. And let me tell you something. I live right here in the tri-state area, or New England. I'm right here. New York market will eat you up, especially if you're not successful. So if he comes out here and he's not successful, I can only imagine the Post or the Daily News, or those newspapers trying to rip him apart if he's not successful. Yeah, I mean, they already give David Wright and Grandison. I mean, you hear how Chandler comes at Grandison. Like, if these guys aren't successful, they'll come at him. So I hope he's ready. I hope he succeeds. But I'm hoping that the one thing that has been following him around is his consistency. And if he was consistent, none of these teams would be passing on him. That's what I'm concerned about.
Exactly, and I was listening to something in Milwaukee where they talked about how the Mets and Gomez in that situation, and how the Brewers organization is saying, you know, Gomez had no injury. So is this the Mets saying, did they already, do you think, and this is me questioning, not knowing how baseball truly works, do you think that they already had the sets for the steal and play and went for that one, or do you really think that the Mets saw something wrong with him and they just didn't want Gomez? That's my question, because it seems to me like you're saying Gomez would have been the better fit, the better bat to have, but it's not like Cespedes is, you know, a downtrodden player, but it just would have been a better bat to have Gomez. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Or are you saying, like, either one, it doesn't really matter? Because by the way that the Brewers were saying it, the Brewers franchise or what have you, is that you know, there was nothing wrong with him and they just chose not to choose him.
I really think that is a situation where if it were up to me, the past two seasons, I think Gomez has actually produced more. The Spanish has the capability of if he makes contact, he could get these pitches out of the park. But he hasn't been consistent. It's been more or less his name has been selling for him, where Gomez has actually been getting up there, providing a spark to a Milwaukee Brewer team that needs more than just a spark, but they need wins. Like, they haven't really been postseason relevant in a long time. I mean, they're trying, and they already get rid of guys like Zach Greinke, and then they also lose a guy like Gomez. They're not trying to make this organization better. I mean, they get a big name there for a season or two and watch him go. They also watch Prince Fielder go. I mean, the list goes on and on up there in Milwaukee, and there might be a situation where this team might build up around each other and get into the postseason, but right now, the way that they're moving big name after big name, it is very questionable for Milwaukee to be successful. But right now, I think Gomez is actually playing the better out of the two in this 2015. I think Gomez. I'd have to go with Gomez. But Cespedes, I mean, if he's consistent, he's dangerous. But he's not consistent. That's why three teams have basically said, you know what, we'll cut our losses. That's the one thing that does concern me. So especially with him being in New York, especially how the Mets are struggling and pushing for any postseason relevance and trying to make it to a NLCS, I don't know. I don't know if this is the move that does it, but if he is to be consistent, if he is catching a hold of a couple of these pitches, watch out. Watch out. Okay, so any other topic that you have before I could throw another one at you, because there's a critical one that I want to get out there.
No, I did have another one, but most of the...
Throw it out, because the other one I have on baseball.
The other one I had was baseball, and it was the Troy Tulowitzki situation and how they, you know, traded him away. Mine was more on a personal level, not having to do with the field, and how they pretty much shipped him away, and how this works in any sport, but how he kind of had no say in it. They didn't even, you know... from my perspective and what I've read and heard, they didn't even, you know, give him the courtesy to say, you know, we're even shopping you. So I just think that I really think that it doesn't matter what the player wants. If the team wants to do whatever the team wants to do, they don't have to tell you anything. I don't care if they're Michael Jordan or Horace Grant or Randy Johnson or Craig Counsell or whoever, showing my age and how much I really know about baseball there. But it really doesn't. It doesn't matter to me, and this could happen in any sport, but I feel like they're making too much of a big deal about it. And I wanted to see how you felt, if you thought they should have given him that option to, or not option, but the courtesy to say, we're trading you. And another thing, and it was more on the personal level, I'd also had to go with the Mets trade that didn't go through with the player crying. I can't remember his name, but them subsequently saying you're traded before the game, and then after the game, you're not traded. And that point being, should you tell a player before a game he's traded or during the game at all? And this situation of you know, playing a game where someone gets traded, how is that? Like, I'm just at a loss at some point. But I really do think that when it pertains to, you know, how they trade you and whatnot, that's up to them. But they could have the common courtesy not to tell you in the middle of a game.
Right, they told him in the middle of the game, and everybody was picking on him, but you got to think, these dudes build up brotherhoods while they're on a team. So, you know, people are like, oh, there's no crying in baseball, trying to go back to the a league of their own reference and so on and so forth. I think they should do it before or after a game. If management wants to trade a guy, You don't tell them in the middle of the game. Let them finish the game as soon as they start walking toward the dugout and get ready to head to the, you know, the clubhouse. Then you make it happen. Like call them into the office and say, you know what, we're going to end up trading you. So here goes the situation. His name is Wilmer Flores, and he's moving. They're trying to say that they were moving him to the Padres. And I'm not sure if they actually rescinded the situation if he's staying in New York. But you got to understand that, like I said, any team that you play on, you build a relationship or brotherhood, so on and so forth. And for him to be in the midst of the game, who's going to want to give it their all? This team sold me down the river. I will go up there and strike out. Well, not to say that, because I don't want to strike out, because I want to hit anyway. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I'm just saying this in general. Like, you feel like it's time for me to go right here at the trade deadline? Like, I'm the weakest link of the team? Like, how am I supposed to feel about this? So, like I said, the guy's name is Wilmer Flores, and everybody was picking on him at the aftermath of them coming to him and telling him that, you know what, you're traded at this point, and at the end of the game, I guess clear out your locker, however you look at it. But emotion are emotion, man. Everybody's human. I could care less of how you could be the biggest, brawniest guy ever. Everybody holds emotion at the end of the day. And what was the other topic before Flores? Because I did want to talk about that. What was the other one before Flores? Did we lose you, Nacho? Are you still here?
Oh, sorry about that. I muted it. It was the situation with Troy Tulowitzki and how he wasn't subsequently asked to be traded or told he was being shopped at all. He just was, you know, traded, and him being the face of that franchise too, not even to have the courtesy. And my point of view saying that it doesn't matter. They don't have to tell him anything.
Well, here's the thing about Tulowitzki. They paid this guy over $100 million. Listen, I'm getting every red cent out of that guy. I mean, there's no way I'm sending him midseason to a Blue Jay team to go help them out. Listen, you're going to stick right here in Colorado with all these weed-smoking dudes out here, and we're going to suffer together. Look, I'm not going to go watch another team to build off your success. And as soon as Tulowitzki got out to Toronto, what do? They win an interesting game up against the best team in the American League going up against the Kansas City Royals. I doubt that. I'd rather see this team suffer together than watch us give you over $100 million. And we're just going to say, you know, bon voyage and pick up somebody else or worry about how money or picks are going to be distributed, so on and so forth. Knowing that these players don't hold, especially in baseball, don't hold too much weight in the management or in the clubhouse, if you will, in front of these skippers and general management, I don't think there's much Tulowitzki could have said, but I know this. As soon as they told Tulowitzki that he's traded, I know he ran to his locker and packed things up, because it was like, enough is enough for me to be in this Colorado Rockies jersey, and we are heavily under 500 every single season, but I get all-star consideration playing with this team. I'm a big bat. I'm doing everything I can, but you're not putting the interesting names around me. So I know Tulowitzki definitely probably was one of the more happier guys to leave his team and go to a team that's in the hunt to make the postseason. I just don't get it. That is shocking in itself. So Colorado, I don't know what y'all been on. Well, I probably have a clue on what you've been on. But, hey, Tulowitzki, job well done, I guess. I guess you did the right thing to get moved to a team that's in the hunt to try and make a run at this postseason. Okay, well, we are at the tail end of the show. I want to save a couple of these topics, at least for the brunch, and I know we got boxing tomorrow, so I'll sit on these, keep them right warm for the food fight, but not so I need a breakdown, close out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut down the round table. Again, huh? You doing it again?
I'm paying rent. Sorry, I had to pay rent. I had it on mute. I'm done now. What was the question? I'm very sorry.
I need a plug, close out, shout out before we shut down the round table.
Oh, you know, you already know, but I'll let them all know. At Nacho in the Box, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Food Fight tomorrow. You know what we got on slate. Garcia Malignani, Daniel Jacobs is fighting tomorrow as well. I know I murdered Paulie's last name, but who really cares at this point? What else is there? Hashtag back-to-back MVPs. I'm excited, and again, if you're going to want to listen to the food fight, if you're thinking about it, Cotto's getting it tomorrow. I'm bodying Cotto for 12 straight rounds, so you might want to tune in because Cotto's going to get it. Again, I'm so excited for these fights on PBC. I'm excited for HBO, Canelo, Cotto. I'm excited for Triple G, Lemieux, October. Now we're going to see what happens in boxing when the best fight the best after Triple G fights Lemieux and he's got to take on Canelo or Cotto. So it's going to be pretty awesome to see him boxing. Football training camps just started. A couple weeks out from first regular preseason game for my team. Just very excited. Can't wait for these Sports City football talk shows to get cracking. We spent a good time on just one quarterback. So imagine what we do when we're talking about all 32 teams. So this is going to be an amazing year for everybody, especially my Green Bay Packers. Again, go Pack, go. Todd, thank you again for letting me come in. One of the best on this platform, like always. Thank you so much, and you have a great night. And so does everybody else.
Go Pack, go back-to-back MVPs. Is he drinking? What is he doing over there? Well, everybody else in the background listening and laughing, what is he doing over there? Please stop him. Get him some water. I know it's hot out there in the desert. I know he's sweating like crazy because I don't like the heat. And that's my little big brother, he's something, too. I know that. So make sure he drinking water. Just stop giving him Heineken and Stella and stuff like that. SportsCityChef.com. Check out the website, interviews, the blog, the chef. Like he said, we'll be back here tomorrow. Food fighting this thing out. Boxing on slate, like he said, man. Cotto's getting it, so I can't wait to see what he has on slate about that. Paulie, there's some people that are pulling for you. Can you handle Danny Garcia is the question. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again, and if they don't know, now they know.
You take y'all somewhere else right now. A nigga got zone out with me, man.
Right,
got zone out with me,
boy. Come back to the center. Zone out with me. Back in the mix of the scuffles, the stadium.